Paul Rudy is co-founder of the Free Gaza Movement. He is a former Ford Foundation supervisor in Lebanon, a Fulbright-Hayes lecturer to Lebanon, and a former contracted U.S. government advisor to Saudi Arabia. He participates in Palestinian nonviolence resistance with the International Solidarity Movement, and he's joining us to talk about a bold plan to challenge Israel's blockade of Gaza with seaborne nonviolent resistance. Hello, Paul Rudy.
Hi, George. It's good to be here with you.
Thanks so much for joining me. So why don't we start off maybe by talking about the overall plan of this seaborne nonviolent resistance. It's called the Free Gaza Movement. And when are you planning on launching the boats, and where are you going to sail from? And maybe the overall kind of idea. We'll delve into the details more, but maybe an overview to start off.
Well, the date for sailing has receded a couple of times. Our original date was August of this year, 2007, and then we postponed it by a month and then another month. Finally, we postponed it until May-June of 2008, partly because the winter is not a good time to set out on the Mediterranean when you might be spending a couple of weeks there. So, and it gives us a lot more time to do the necessary preparations. So now the most likely date, the one that we're aiming for, is that we'll actually set sail in the first week of June, gather in Cyprus at the end of May.
So in May, June of 2008, volunteers with the Free Gaza Movement will set sail from Cyprus to Gaza.
That's right.
And maybe you can talk about who'll be on board of the boats, how many boats you plan to have.
Well, anywhere between 2 and 100, I guess, boats. I say that a little bit facetiously, but the minimum that we need is 2, hopefully 3, that we'll use ourselves, and maybe up to 6 if we can afford it or get some help. But the rest of the boats will be volunteer boats from around the Mediterranean or around the world that just want to come along and create a small flotilla with us. So we're also inviting them, but I wouldn't say that they're our boats per se.
Who will be on board the boats, and what is the overall aim of the mission?
The aim of the mission really is to put it in a word, it's freedom. It's freedom for the people in Gaza, because right now they're living in a virtual prison. And I'm sure you've covered this many times before on your show, but it's getting worse. Nothing at all is permitted to leave Gaza now, so there are no exports of any kind. And there are only a dozen or less basic commodities that are permitted to enter right now. These are essentially basic humanitarian goods, and not even enough of that. According to the UN, it's not enough to maintain the required caloric intake for the number of people in Gaza. So, and now they're cutting back on fuel and electricity and a lot of hospitals. Well, you could say all the hospitals there are really not functioning normally. They don't have the supplies necessary to do so many things. So if I were to draw an analogy, as terrible as it sounds, it's... if we think about what Nazi Germany did to the Warsaw Ghetto in World War II, they didn't go there and wipe out and cart away the Jewish population from the beginning. They started with other steps, and they walled it up, which has happened to Gaza. They cut off fuel and electricity, which has happened to Gaza. They denied people permission to leave, which has happened to Gaza. They denied permission for people and goods to enter, which has happened to Gaza. They restricted the foods, in a similar situation. We hope, and if I had to guess, I don't think it'll go as far as what happened in the Warsaw Ghetto, but it's already gone too far. So our objective is to open it up, to say that the Palestinians in Gaza have the same rights to international access and to access to basic humanitarian needs.
And who's joining you in this effort? Who will be on the boats, and who's supporting this?
A variety of nationalities, a variety of religions, of celebrities. We're expecting about a quarter of the population to be Palestinian. We're expecting a quarter of the population to be Israeli in terms of citizenship, and a quarter of the population, not necessarily the same population, to be Jewish. But we'll have Jews and Muslims and Christians and atheists and clerics of all kinds, imams and priests and Buddhist monks and rabbis. And celebrities, members of the British Parliament, and actors and directors and entertainers, and press. Of course, we'll have press broadcasting live via satellite and sending video in rapid time. And we have videographers, documentary filmmakers who will be on board.
What's your main obstacle in getting this launched? You mentioned that you had to set the date back a few times, and now the goal is to leave in May, June of 2008 from Cyprus to sail to Gaza in a number of boats. You're not sure of the number yet, but at least two.
Right.
What has been the major obstacle in getting this off the ground?
Well, by far the major obstacle has been money, because it's an expensive project. It can't be done entirely with volunteer help. We have to acquire the boats, and that takes a minimum of $100,000, and that it would be very tight with $100,000. We really need $200,000 and preferably $300,000, not just for the boats, but certainly $200,000 would be very good to get the boats that we need.
And you need to buy the boat? You can't lease them or borrow them?
Well, that's the best plan. First of all, boats that have been leased in the past, there was a similar effort in 1988. And Israel saw to it that, it got to the boat owners and told them, no, you don't want to do this. I don't know what coercive methods they used, but the boat owners pulled the leases from the group that was planning this at the time, which was the PLO, doing a nonviolent action. And so the PLO discovered rather late in the game that they would have to buy a boat, which they did, and it was then sabotaged. So we're going to start out with the assumption that we have to buy the boat. But we don't have to... If we had to pay for the whole boat, it would cost us at least $500,000. So we're but what we can do is the normal procedure of putting a down payment and paying the rest by installment. And after the action is over, if we have to, we'll sell the boats and use the proceeds to pay off the remaining installments, or keep one of the boats, and if we're really, really successful, we'll have a ferry service going back and forth, and it will earn enough revenue to pay the remaining costs.
So, speaking of fundraising, you have a dinner coming up this Sunday night in San Francisco at Medjool Restaurant, isn't that right?
Right. Thanks for mentioning that. This is really an exciting event. It's a fundraiser dinner, so you do have to bring some cash to pay for it. The dinner itself costs us a significant amount for each person. So we're asking $75 and, if possible, $100 per ticket. The information is available at freegaza.org. But at this dinner, we'll answer questions, do a presentation, the presentation that you yourself have seen, and I'll let you tell your listeners what you think of it. But in addition to the presentation, we have Dr. Hatem Bazian speaking. He's a professor at Berkeley, probably well known to many of your listeners. And we have Dr. Iyad Sarraj, who is the chairperson of the Break the Siege campaign, speaking to us from Gaza by phone. And Jamal Dajani, who is the producer of Mosaic News on Link TV. So hey, we've got quite a lineup. It's really worth coming, and the food is delicious, and it's really exciting if people want to get in on that.
And I thought that Dr. Iyad El-Sarraj was going to be there in person all the way from Gaza, but he's going to be on the phone, I guess.
Oh, no, no. He can't leave Gaza that easily.
Yeah. Or get back in would be a bigger concern,
right,
probably.
Right, yeah.
So you're going to have Dr. Hatem Bazian. Again, he's a lecturer, senior lecturer in Near Eastern and Ethnic Studies at and adjunct professor of law at the Bolt Hall School of Law at the University of California, Berkeley, and he's also the author of Jerusalem and Islamic Consciousness. He's a human rights advocate. And Dr. Paul Arudi, my guest on the phone, as well as Jamal Dajani, an award-winning producer and director of Middle Eastern programming at Link TV, where his Mosaic, World News from the Middle East, won a Peabody Award. And also, as you heard, Dr. Iyad El-Sarraj, co-founder and medical director of the Gaza Community Mental Health Program and chair of the Palestinian Independent Commission of Citizens' Rights and of the Campaign to Break the Siege on Gaza. And will Dr. Iyad El-Sarraj be joining you on the boat?
No, he's part of our reception committee in Gaza, and he and Dr. Mona Al-Farra and Raji Surani. Dr. Mona Al-Farra is with the Red Crescent Society. She was in the Bay Area not too long ago on a speaking tour. And Raji Surani is the director of the Palestinian Human Rights Center. So they're part of a committee there that is making all the local arrangements.
So again, the speakers we just listed will be at this fundraising event to help end the siege of Gaza. It's a fundraising event for the Free Gaza Movement. And if you just tuned in, the Free Gaza Movement, again, has a bold plan to challenge Israel's blockade of Gaza with seaborne nonviolent resistance. They plan to leave in May/June of 2008 with unarmed volunteers of the Free Gaza Movement from Cyprus sailing to Gaza in defiance of the Israeli blockade of Gaza. They will include Palestinians, Israelis, internationals, Holocaust survivors, Nakba survivors, British MPs, actors, directors, entertainers, priests, imams, rabbis, reporters, filmmakers, and donations will provide the boats, equipment, supplies, and logistics to make all this happen. Again, there's a fundraising dinner coming up this Sunday, December 9th at 6 p.m. in San Francisco at the Medjool restaurant that's at 2516 Mission Street. Maybe you can let folks know how they can obtain tickets to this event.
You can go to brownpapertickets.com and just to do a search on Free Gaza, and you'll find the right page to get your tickets online. Otherwise, you can call me directly at 510-236-5338. Not everybody has computer access.
Right. So the number again is 510-236-5338, and the website is freegaza.org. And I'll mention both of those at the end of the interview. So you've mentioned that one of the main obstacles, or the main obstacle to getting this off the ground, is fundraising, that you need at least $100,000, and you would like up to $300,000 to actually make this as successful as possible. How much have you raised so far?
We've raised a little over $50,000 so far, which is pretty good.
So you're about halfway to the minimum amount
right.
that you need. So
right.
what if somebody was listening to this or they saw your PowerPoint presentation or just, you know, were interested, but they're hesitating because this seems really, there's so many reasons why someone might be skeptical of this. I mean, for one, they might feel that, well, okay, they're going to set out on boats from Cyprus and, you know, let's say all goes well and they sail from Cyprus in May and June 2008, they raise the funds, they could just be stopped. They could just be stopped by Israel in the waters in the Mediterranean right off the coast of Gaza, and that would be the end of it. So what's the point? I mean, that's how some folks may look at it. So what would you say to somebody who felt that way?
We could be stopped, and in fact, we expect to be stopped. The most likely, there are lots of possibilities as to how it will play out. Israel has actually said that they're inclined, a spokesperson for Israel has said that they're inclined to let us go in. But I don't think they'll let us go back and forth at will. I think that they might stop us and say, well, we want to inspect you first. And we'll say, no, you have no right to inspect us. We're not in Israeli waters. We're not going through Israeli territory. And so there might be a standoff there, and they might not permit us to go in. Or they might let us in anyway and not interfere, but when we come back out and when we go back in again, we're going to go back and forth as much as we can, and sooner or later, I think they are going to stop us, because they're otherwise, they'll end up with a traffic of all kinds of commercial boats and ferries going back and forth with no supervision at all by the Israeli military. Which basically means freedom for Gaza. And I don't think they would permit that. Sooner or later, that will happen. But what it does accomplish, even if and when that happens, is that it demonstrates to Palestinians in Gaza that there is solidarity from people around the world. It makes people around the world more aware of what is happening in Gaza. And it shows the determination of the world to make a change there. So it basically puts Israel on notice, and it might cause them to rethink some of their policies. Anyway,
you say the waters off Gaza are not Israeli waters. Are they international waters?
The coastline there, Gaza is on the coast, and the coastline there is the coastline that belongs to the territory of Gaza under international law. Israel doesn't even claim it, that it's Israeli waters. In fact, there's a gas field out there that Israel intends to buy the gas from that gas field from the Palestinian Authority. They're going to pay the Palestinian Authority and put it in an escrow account in Europe. So even Israel recognizes that those are not Israeli waters.
So you're sailing from Cyprus through international waters and into Gaza's territorial waters. What right would the Israeli government have to meddle in any way with you? And if they did, what possible justification would they use for such interference?
Well, according to them, they have the right to patrol those waters under the Oslo Agreement. And, however, the Oslo Agreement expired a long time ago, and even Israel itself has said numerous times that Oslo is dead as an agreement. So, you know, our sense is that they can't claim authority under the Oslo Agreement when it's convenient, and then say that it doesn't apply in other situations. We'll take them at their word that the Oslo Agreement is dead and say they have no business there.
What will you do when they stop you if that indeed happens?
We're going to remain at sea, and if they prevent us from going in, we will in effect be preventing them from going somewhere else. They'll have to stay there in order to prevent us from going in.
For how long?
Who knows? As long as we can. And we'll issue an appeal to boats to come from all over the Mediterranean and elsewhere and join us and have a big sit-down strike in the middle of the Mediterranean.
So you'll have communications equipment on board, some way to get the message out to the world of what's happening there?
Yeah, we have satellite communication equipment.
And you'll have journalists on board?
Yes, exactly.
May I ask what journalists are interested in coming along at this point?
Well, thus far, we've had the Associated Press and the office in Jerusalem, as well as Al Jazeera, and we have a couple of prominent journalists who have requested that we not mention their names right now, but let's say those names would be well known to everybody.
So you'd be out there if they stopped you for at least a matter of weeks, and you would have journalists on board, communications, satellite communications, and you'd be
putting
the word out that what was happening is you were being prevented from entering through Gaza's territorial waters to into the port there. How many boats? You say at least two. Would there be any ability for one of those boats or the other boats to move back and forth while one stayed there so that you could get supplies? How do you plan to maintain such a standoff?
Well, one of the boats has to be a large boat because we can't. It's really hard to stay at sea for an extended period of time on small boats. So the large one will be resupplied by preferably two smaller ones or more, depending on what facilities we have. But that will be our platform. The large boat will be the platform, and then the other one will shuttle back and forth with passengers and supplies, because not everybody will be willing to stay for that period of time.
Could Israel interfere with the smaller boat shuttling supplies through international waters?
I think they might, but I think they would seek justification not to allow boats to enter Gaza. They won't. I don't think they'll prevent boats from moving on the high seas.
Now, everyone on these boats, and there's going to be, what, roughly 100 people total? Or
yeah, the minimum is 40 or 50, and probably on the first voyage, the maximum would probably be about 100.
These volunteers will be unarmed.
Yes.
What do you intend to do to ensure that you're not accused of or have things planted on your boats where some Israel might be able to accuse you of ill intent?
Yeah, we are very concerned that Israel or people who support Israel might try all kinds of things to either make us look bad or to basically to undermine the mission. One of those is to plant arms and explosives on board and to claim that we're not really the nonviolent people that we say we are. So our plan is to have the boats thoroughly inspected by an international agency, maybe the Cypriot authorities, if they're willing, to make sure that there are no arms or dangerous materials aboard.
You're going to have an independent inspection.
That's right. That's for our own benefit. It's not in order to certify to Israeli authorities anything. We don't feel that Israel has any say or any right to inspect us, and we're not going to turn over our inspection papers to Israeli officials.
You see it as a way to protect yourself from false accusations or sabotage.
Right.
So maybe I should have addressed this from the outset, but why are you going by sea? Why not just simply enter Gaza by land?
Well, to enter Gaza by land, you have to go either through Egypt or through Israel. And in either case, you have to get permission from the authorities. No one has been able to enter Gaza through Egypt for years now, and through Israel, if you can't enter Israel, as some of us can't, especially those who have Lebanese passports or myself, I've been banned from Israel, in effect, and besides that, you have to get special permission to enter Gaza and so forth. So and of course, Gaza is surrounded by a 27-foot-high wall of steel and concrete, and so really, Gaza is off limits by land. But the the sea, of course, there's no wall there, and besides it, you don't have to go through Israeli or Egyptian territory in order to enter Gaza by sea.
You said that the mission of this Free Gaza movement and the plan to sail into Gaza is to break the siege, to raise international awareness about the closure of the Gaza Strip, and to raise pressure on the international community to do something about the situation and to end its kind of blanket support of Israel and their continued occupation, even though they deny occupying Gaza, as well as to show solidarity with Palestinians living there under this siege. Is part of the intention at all to bring in humanitarian aid?
Yes, okay. We will be bringing food and medical supplies. And we had an inspired suggestion recently that we'll take some of the supplies that that Israel specifically has banned, such as school books. Israel has banned Gaza from receiving children's school books, sometimes pencils and paper. So we might make a special effort to take those banned products just because it sounds so ridiculous that they are banned.
So maybe you could just talk a little bit about the size of the Gaza Strip and kind of a little bit more about the current situation there. I understand that the Israeli government has cut electricity. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, the Gaza Strip is only about 25 miles long and 4 to 8 miles wide, and the population there is about 1.5 million people, more than half of them children. So many of them have, in fact, I would have to say probably the vast majority have never been out of the Gaza Strip. It's the only place they've ever seen. And things just keep getting worse. We're doing an orientation and training for the people there. They have to understand when they go to Gaza how to be extremely careful about the use of water. Basically, don't shower. The way people live in Gaza is to, with the water situation, is to use it for drinking, sparingly for cooking, rarely for washing, and after you do use it for washing, you save the water so that you can use it to flush the toilet. I mean, it's inconceivable how people have to live there.
And this is all the result, this siege of Gaza is all the result of the fact that Hamas was elected, the majority of the government elected in.
I don't say it's because of Hamas's takeover. I say it's because Israel likes to use that as the pretext to do something that it has always wanted to do, which is to increase pressure on the Palestinian people to leave. They don't want Palestinians there. I mean, the analogy with the Warsaw Ghetto extends much farther. The Palestinians, as far as Israel is concerned, is a despised population that they don't want to be there. So they'll put all kinds of pressure. If it hadn't been Hamas, they would have found something else, some other pretext to do it.
What about rocket fire? That was another reason that's presented.
Yeah. These rockets, the so-called Qassams, that resemble the rockets used in the War of 1812, homemade. They complain about the tunnels, the smuggling tunnels with Egypt, which certainly exist. But as far as I know, probably not a single Katyusha rocket has ever come there, because none has been fired for I don't know how long. have been fired, but in fact thousands of them. But the damage that they have caused pales by comparison of what a single bomb dropped by an F-16 does in Gaza. And yes, they have killed 9 people over the course of, 5 years now. But again, a single bomb from an F-16 typically kills more than that in Gaza. So I don't condone the killing that happens as a result of these rockets. I oppose all forms of violence, but I'm not. But we have to talk about cause and effect here. And when you put people under that kind of pressure, you have to expect that kind of result.
What do you? This will be, you know, nearing the end of the interview here, but so, what do you think would be a fair situation and outcome for Gaza? And how do you see this mission, the Free Gaza mission of sailing in from Cyprus, as part of that, as moving toward that larger goal?
Great question. First of all, although we might have a vision of what the real solution for the Middle East is, we acknowledge that Israel exists and that every nation of which Israel is one has a right to defend its population and its borders, but only its borders. So Israel has a border with Gaza. Let them regulate their border in accordance with international law, and let them defend their border against incursions and so forth. But to prohibit Gaza from free communication with the outside world, I mean, Gaza doesn't prohibit and restrict Israeli communication with the outside world. So basically, they need to have the freedom to act as all peoples and countries and sovereign nations do. That's really our objective. Our initiative, the boat project, is intended to help that advance that goal and to create a vision of how things should be, and maybe to mobilize other groups to take similar action, especially if it's nonviolent action. So we're hoping that it'll snowball, that it'll have a cumulative an effect of inspiring other things to happen.
Let's say that the best case scenario is that you not only get into Gaza and demonstrate your solidarity and deliver the humanitarian aid and show that this can be done, and then you start a ferry service as part of the plan from Cyprus to Gaza, and people and goods are able to flow back and forth. How would you ensure that this would remain an unarmed, nonviolent resistance movement and not be used, the ferry service, as a way to, well, I don't know, move arms or other types of things?
Well, we would not want our ferry service, which would be a nonprofit corporation or business, that we would not want it used for arms. But international law does permit people to defend themselves. So if it really opens up, I mean, I would not be surprised to see other means of transport used to provide the means to defend themselves. I'm not encouraging it, but it's basically just opening Gaza to normal kinds of traffic and commerce and communication that every people and every nation has a right to.
But you would not want your ferry service to be used that way. So how would you ensure that that wouldn't happen?
Well, we will continue to have for the inspections. We'd probably have to use a private agency after a certain period of time. And in addition, we will have on board, the plan is to have a nonviolent marshals. And we've approached the Nonviolent Peace Force, which does that kind of thing in Sri Lanka. And they have their own financial support in order to do that, and they've expressed an interest in doing that. So we're exploring that with them, and we hope that every voyage will have a group of marshals who have been trained in nonviolent resistance and will use it in case there is interference.
I've been speaking with Dr. Paul Rudy again. He's co-founder of the Free Gaza Movement. He is a former Ford Foundation supervisor in Lebanon, a Fulbright-Hayes lecturer to Lebanon, and former contracted U.S. government advisor to Saudi Arabia. He participates in Palestinian nonviolent resistance with the International Solidarity Movement, and he is, again, co-founder of the Free Gaza Movement that we've been talking about. Their website is freegaza.org, and the plan, again, is to sail to Gaza in May of 2008. And by the way, that will be 60 years since 1948, since the formation of the State of Israel. And there will be, in sailing from Cyprus to Gaza, there will be a maximum of 100 unarmed volunteers with the Free Gaza Movement. They'll sail, again, in May of 2008 in defiance.
Let me mention also, That's only on the first voyage. If we're successful with the first voyage, the second voyage will be a week later, and the week after that. So we may have hundreds of volunteers who will in fact go back and forth in the coming weeks, to the extent that we're permitted to operate.
And all of these folks sailing in defiance of Israel's blockade on Gaza, again, including Palestinians, Israelis, internationals, Nakba and Holocaust survivors, British MPs, actors, directors, entertainers, priests, imams, rabbis, reporters, and filmmakers. And this, again, to challenge Israel's blockade of Gaza through seaborne nonviolent resistance. And I want to mention again that there's an upcoming fundraiser. Well, there's more than one, but there's one this Sunday in San Francisco at the Medjool restaurant at 2516 Mission Street in San Francisco. It's at 6 p.m. this Sunday, December 9th. It's a benefit to support the Free Gaza Movement, which, by the way, is a nonprofit organization. And again, they have a website, freegaza.org. There's going to be a number of speakers, including my guest on the phone, Dr. Paul Rudy. There'll also be three others, Dr. Hatem Bazian, a senior lecturer in Near Eastern and Ethnic Studies and adjunct professor of law at Boyle Hall School of Law at the University of California, Berkeley, and author of Jerusalem and Islamic Consciousness. Also will be Jamal Dajani, an award-winning producer and director of Middle Eastern programming at Link TV, where his Mosaic World News from the Middle East won a Peabody Award. He's also the co-host of Arab Talk on KPU and vice chair of the San Francisco Immigrant Rights Commission. Dr. Ayad El-Siraj is co-founder and medical director of the Gaza Community Mental Health Program. He'll be on the phone from Gaza at the event. Several incredible speakers to share with you the plan of the Free Gaza Movement and an opportunity for you to support it. Not the only opportunity, but certainly one coming up soon that is going to be quite good from the sounds of the speakers. So, Paul, did you want to give out your phone number and the website again and just maybe make a final comment and we'll wrap up?
By all means, the website is freegaza.org and the phone number is 510-236-5338. And we would welcome everyone who wants to come and have your questions. We'll have the full presentation there to show you all the details about it. And it'll be a great occasion with some good food and some good talking as well.
Thank you so much for being with me today, Paul.
Thank you, Joe. George. I always appreciate your invitation.
Again, that was Dr. Paul Rudy, and he is one of the speakers at the upcoming December 9th fundraiser dinner in San Francisco. And again, to get more information about the Free Gaza movement or any of the upcoming fundraisers, you can go to the website freegaza.org, or you can call Paul directly at 510-236-5338. freegaza.org. And if you don't have web access, give Paul a call at 510-236-5338. Thanks so much for listening to this show, Peace Talks, and the station Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thanks for listening.
You ask me how it is that I dare to take a side. You say I loathe myself, pointing out you have lied. You say it's tribal warfare, but I disagree, for the dynamics of the situation are not difficult to see. On the one side is the fighter jet, on the other is the stone. On the one side is the slave, on the other is the throne. For the many there are checkpoints, while foreign soldiers rule the streets. For the one side there is victory, but the people don't accept defeat. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the tanks return to Tel Aviv. On the one side there is hunger and bulldozed olive trees. On the other is the army, ruling by decrees. Caterpillars maul the streets, destroy whole city blocks, while children swallow shrapnel for the crime of throwing rocks. Fences are erected around the towns they flatten, and Herzl's fanatics sleep on sheets of satin. And they water their plantations, drilling ever deeper wells, while the displaced children of the hopeless are filled with bullet shells. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the settlers return to Tel Aviv. On the one side there's the Mossad, rounding up the men, thrown in jail with no trial, being tortured once again. On the other there is rage, helplessness and fear, and a growing realization that another Holocaust is near. On the outside there are prisons, the inside detainees, being stripped of their humanity, beaten naked to their knees. Outside the ghetto walls, stormtroopers all around, while inside the hungry people yearn for liberated ground. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the jail guards return to Tel Aviv. All across the world, you can hear the people say, the children of Jerusalem will be free one day. In overcrowded camps, amidst the stench of death and flies, to the suburbs of Detroit, you can hear the anguish cries. While in the land of Israel, with God ever on their side, walls and fences are constructed, papers are denied. People fight for their existence, while we turn a blinded eye. And those who should know better insist on asking why. The words you need to know is occupation, very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It will come on the day the refugees return to Tel Aviv.